politics could learn something from the arts, namely that conflict can be creative and generative. Steve Paulson's been reading The Art of Rivalry by art critic Sebastian Smee. It's the story of the intense conflicts that fueled some of the most dramatic breakthroughs in modern art. For instance, in the early 1900s, a young Spanish painter named Pablo Picasso arrived in Paris and started trying to make a name for himself. But there was another artist that everybody was already talking about, a man 10 years older named Henri Matisse.
He had an amazing sort of manner, Matisse. He was very convincing. He was very good at talking about his own work. And even though it looked crazy to most people, because he was painting in such a wild and rough-looking style, he was very good at explaining what he was doing and convinced many people. It was more difficult for Picasso at this stage, not only because he was younger, but because he didn't have a good grasp of French. And, you know, he's watching what Matisse is doing. He's trying to be experimental and quite avant-garde himself, but everything Matisse does seems to be one step ahead of him, sort of wilder, more daring, and he's better at explaining it. So I think at this point it was an incredibly galling kind of thing for Picasso to be dealing with.
You know, did they both know they were competing with each other?
That's a great question. I think Picasso felt very conscious of competing with Matisse, and you can see that in the way that he adopts all these, you know, new ideas and new methods from Matisse. But I suspect that Matisse wasn't quite so aware that he was in a kind of rivalry. And I think it took him a while before he realized that he was in a real battle. You know, at that point where Picasso really tries to push away and hurry on and form his own artistic identity, at which point he paints the Demoiselle d'Avignon, which is the famous work now in the Museum of Modern Art. And then from there with Braque, who had been Matisse's friend and fellow fauvist, they invent Cubism together, Picasso and Braque. So Braque has defected, if you like, from Matisse to Picasso's side. So it all gets very complicated, and I think it's only at that point that Matisse becomes aware that he really has a serious rival on his hands.
Now, are you saying that Picasso's revolutionary work, Les Demoiselles d'Avignon, is to some degree a product of having watched Matisse and sort of feeling like he had to one-up Matisse?
There's no doubt about it. You know, you can see it really on the canvas. I mean, one of the more obvious instances of this, apart from the fact that we know he'd seen Matisse's Blue Nude, apart from that, he'd also seen some African sculptures that Matisse had showed him. And he listened to what Matisse was saying, and then he went away. And it's not so long after that that he repaints a part of this huge canvas he's working on, the Demoiselle d'Avignon, and puts two African-style masks on the faces of two of the five figures in that painting.
Now, were they friends, or were they more just sort of, I don't know, they'd go to each other's studios and look at each other's art? I mean, how far did the relationship go?
You know, in a sense, The relationship kind of went in and out of friendship. At times, I think it really was quite pointed and charged with a kind of rivalry. But then it would go back into sort of mutual admiration and friendship. And there was a period there during the First World War where we hear about them going horse riding together. And they would exchange works and inquire after one another's family. So there really was a closeness there, and Matisse would even, you know, recommend Picasso to important collectors. So it went beyond rivalry into something that was much more complex, and, you know, maybe the word frenemies, which we use a lot these days, is the best way to describe it.
Well, let's talk about another one of your rivalries that you write about between the two 19th century Impressionists, Manet and Degas, who also had a fraught friendship, and there was this remarkable moment when Manet actually destroyed a portrait that Degas had painted. Can you explain what happened?
Yes, it's really extraordinary. I went to Japan to a rather obscure museum there to see it, and it really is a gorgeous thing, but you think, my word, what actually happened there? What an extraordinary thing for one friend, a gifted artist who, according to everyone, was incredibly affable and everyone seemed to love him. How strange that he felt compelled to take a knife to this canvas. But there was conflict and there was jealousy and all sorts of things going on in their relationship at that time. And apart from that, you know, Manet was going through a very difficult time in his own career, whereas Degas, who had been profoundly influenced by Manet, was at this stage really on the up and up. And I think that changing dynamic must have affected things as well.
So was this another case where each other's art kind of spurred the other one on? I mean, the rivalry?
I think so. And, you know, after their brief falling out over that slashed painting, Degas said about Manet, it's impossible to remain enemies for long. they patched things up. I don't think things were ever quite the same, but you get a sense, a bit like with Matisse and Picasso, of them looking at each other over the next decade or so before Manet died. And if Degas painted a horse track, Manet would paint a horse track, but in a different way. If Degas painted women trying on hats in a shop, then Manet would try that himself. And so it did work both ways, and it's fascinating to trace the mutual influence.
And you say that after Manet died, even though, you know, he had destroyed this painting that Degas had given him, that Degas became an avid collector of Manet's work.
He really did, and I found that so moving. I'd never really realized the extent of the collection of works by Manet that he had. He collected other artists as well, but you had a feeling that in doing so, he was sort of keeping Manet close to him and in a way trying to compensate for not only for the loss of Manet, his friend, but for what went wrong between them as a result of this rivalry.
Now, what's interesting in both of these rivalries we've talked about so far, they weren't just bitter rivals, you know, trying to dismiss each other. There was real intimacy as well in their friendships, and which means that there were periods of openness, of vulnerability to each other.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad you bring that up, because that was a feeling that most interested me. I really wasn't interested in writing a story about macho guys butting heads. You know, it is about male rivalry, but it is much more yielding, as you say, and open. And you know, Matisse said it beautifully when he said, you know, I've never been afraid of the influence of others. He said, I would have considered it a cowardice and a betrayal of myself if I had been afraid to take on influence. And I think that's so admirable and something that, you know, maybe we all need to think about in our lives. When we have enemies or rivalries, it's worth thinking about what we can learn from them and taking on board that influence. Because it's usually when, you know, we feel threatened that we feel that way.
Well, the other thing that played out in all of these rivalries that you've described is the friendships all suffered at certain points. I mean, there were rocky times. Sometimes they sort of never were really able to repair them. And I guess I wonder if when you are competing at the highest levels, you know, you're very close to another artist and then you want to best that other artist, is it possible to stay friends?
That's a great question, but I think, you know, the evidence is yes. You know, to talk about Matisse and Picasso again, you know, the fact that they did, I mean, the tension between them around 1908, 1910, when Cubism is being invented and Picasso really does overtake Matisse in terms of renown and the interest of critics and collectors and all the crucial people, it suddenly switched in a way that must have been so disorienting for Matisse. It all switched to Picasso. And yet they managed to remain friends. As I said, it went in and out, but they were looking at each other's work. They were incredibly respectful and often fond of each other for long periods after that. And it was the same, you know, with the other artists. Degas and Manet patched things up, you know, and it's a testament, I think, to, you know, the largeness of spirit that all of these artists in different ways had. I mean, we tend to look at the lives of many of these great artists and despair because we think, oh my God, the bohemian cliches and the self-destruction and the sort of narcissism often, or the selfishness, the wreckage they left behind in their personal lives. It's all true in a way, but I think we forget what it really does take to be truly original and truly great. You know, it's easy to patronize it. It's harder to really get to grips with what it would be like to be there out on a limb. Because of the sort of psychic cost of that, I think that relationships with other artists that you really admire become very important.
Boston Globe art critic Sebastian Smee, he's the author of The Art of Rivalry, Four Friendships, Betrayals, and Breakthroughs in Modern Art. Steve Paulson was talking with him. And coming up, writer Jacqueline Woodson on growing up in Brooklyn and her new novel. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.